Good afternoon, friends. My name is Raj Rangayan from the University of Calgary. It's my pleasure to be here for the fourth time in Tampere. At the outset, I would like to thank Professor Yaka Molmivu for inviting me and giving this opportunity to present my course here for you. To give you a little bit of my background, I did my PhD at the Indian Institute of Science in Bangalore, India. Bangalore is now a big center for information and communications technology in India, as you know. I did my PhD in 1980 and then moved to Canada in 1981, and I've been with the University of Calgary since 1984. My PhD work was on biomedical signal analysis, on the analysis of ECG, heart sounds, EMG, and so on. At the University of Calgary, I introduced this course. The number ENEL563 is from Calgary, the catalog number or calendar number. Here you have some other number, I presume. I didn't change that. I introduced this course about 10 years ago and then started working on my book, which was released in 2001 with a date of 2002 that you have with you. And then I did my second book on biomedical image analysis. I've been teaching a graduate level or postgraduate level course on digital image processing since 1981 or 82. And I have always included biomedical applications in that course. And eventually I work towards this other book. And if there is interest, I shall be pleased to come and give a course on biomedical image analysis using the other book. So I'm glad to see so many of you here interested in this course and prepared for a very intensive, what is sometimes called a crash course. I hope nobody crashes during this course or after this course. Please stay awake. There is coffee and sugar for energy. That's good. I didn't know that there would be refreshments here, so that's good to keep your energy level up. This is a rather intensive course. When I came here in the year 2000 and gave the course, it was spread over about 1 month with a break in between. The courses, the lectures were a bit irregular, but not a full day at a time. The plan now for you is we have half a day today until 6 o'clock. Approximately. And tomorrow and day after, we have two full days, about seven and a half hours of lectures. So bring your own cappuccino if you wish, or you will have coffee here. And on Friday, we will have about 3/4 of the day till about 4 o'clock, correct? We intend to finish by 4 o'clock on Friday. So it's about 23, 24 hours of lectures with gaps in between. I'll give you 15-minute breaks whenever we reach a point when we can take a break. Each lecture session will be approximately 90 to 100 minutes, about 1.5 hours, 1 hour and 45 minutes, depending upon when we get a proper break. And then we'll take a 15-minute break, continue, and take a lunch break, about 1 hour lunch break, and then continue. Is that okay? That's what you have signed up for. So that's the plan. Now there are a few other details that I would like to go through before we actually start the material. You have my address here, my telephone number, but I don't expect you to call me. My email address is there, and my website is here. This is the website for my course as taught in Calgary. Under that, there are some additional resources. If you wish to look at previous examinations I have given in Calgary, there are some examinations there. There are some corrections to the book and updates to the book to clarify some points that were not clear in the original book. There are some corrections, and please go to this website and download a file called updates.pdf. And use that in conjunction with your book. There are also solutions to selected examples. I think I called it solutions.pdf or something, which is here. So many of the exercises you see at the end of each chapter have been worked out, and the solutions are available for you to study. And that is also here in the form of a PDF file. I have not given this course in this intensive format in a matter of 4 days. I gave an informal version of this course in Beijing, China last year to a small group of students. We had more of a discussion session and we went through the same material. But this is the first time I'll be giving a course in this format. It's not clear to me how well I can time the chapters, but the plan is to go through the first 6 chapters in the book, skipping 1 or 2 items in between that are not suitable for an introductory course or a first course on biomedical signal analysis. If there is time, I'll come back and go through those points. Otherwise, we'll be skipping 3 or 4 subsections in these chapters. I hope to go through chapters 1 and 2 today, and chapter 3 tomorrow, chapters 4, 5 day after, chapter 6 on Friday, approximately. I don't want to rush through any material. If something is not clear, feel free to stop me, ask questions, and I'll be prepared to write on the board and explain as necessary. So I cannot predict exactly when I'll finish each section or subsection in the book, but this is the general plan. I forgot to mention or ask you to pay attention. I suppose you are paying attention always. For the lab exercises that are planned for the course, I would suggest that you work in teams of 2. So you may wish to find a partner at your own institute or institution to do the lab exercises. Now, the grading of the course will be in 3 parts. The lectures will finish this week, as you know, and you will have the month of September. The details of the exact dates will be given later on by the teaching assistant, Emre Kapucu. And you will have the details later of the exact schedule. But approximately, you will have the month of September to finish the exercises associated with the course. In Calgary, I teach this course over a duration of 13 weeks, which is 1 semester, starting the beginning of September, going towards the middle of December. Every week, we have 3 hours of lecture, 1 hour of tutorial to work problems and have discussions, and 2 hours of lab exercises. I give the students 1 lab exercise every week, and they get about 10 exercises over the semester. But here, we cannot do that during the lectures. I also give them homework problems, about 6 or 7 sets of problems. So what we intend to do in your situation here is today, tomorrow, I'll work with Emre, and we will prepare a set of problems for you to work on your own. You can call them homework assignments. There will be approximately 6 sets of the problems, 3-4 problems in each set related to each chapter. And you work them on your own, and you submit the solutions to the teaching assistant, Emre Kapucu, and he will mark them. And I will discuss with him the details and go through the material after he marks them. There will be also 6 lab assignments for you to work with signals and write small programs in MATLAB or any other language you wish to use. MATLAB is easy. I hope all of you are familiar with MATLAB. So these exercises, you could work in teams of 2. That's what we do in Calgary. If you don't have another person to work with after you go to your home institution, then you may have to work on your own. Otherwise, you could form teams of 2 and submit the reports for the labs in as a team with both names on. Not more than two, please. A team of three would be hard to manage, and each one may not contribute equally, whereas a team of two is okay. If you cannot form a team of two, you work on your own. Okay? The homework problem assignments will be worth 20%. The lab exercises will be worth 30% of the total grade. The lab reports will be giving you information on what is expected. I don't need your MATLAB code, but I would like to see all the results plotted, the signals plotted appropriately, and a brief discussion telling what you have found, what you have discovered in that assignment. Okay? Many of them will be related to examples in the book, so the end result is obvious. So you have to work towards that result. And you have to develop your own code and show that you understand what is being done. And that will, in my opinion and experience, assist you in seeing a practical application of the techniques that we will learn in the course and confirm for yourself that, yes, these techniques work. And you will also encounter some problems and difficulties. And in solving them, you will go through a learning experience that will eventually help you appreciate the nature of the problem, the nature of the signal, and the solution. Okay? The final exam will be of 3-hour duration. There are examples of previous final examinations as I give in Calgary on this website. And you can go through them. At the end of each chapter, there are problems, which are all from previous examinations I have given. So as long as you work the problems at the end of each chapter, not necessarily on your own, you could again form a team of two, not a big team, not the whole class sitting together and working, but if you do the homework assignments in teams of two, I think it'll help in understanding things better. If you want to work on your own, that's okay too. So as long as you go through these exercises, you should be able to understand and appreciate the material, and they will help you in going through the examination and also the lab exercises and the homework examples. As I mentioned, solutions to selected problems are given in a file on this website. They should also help you in working the exercises. I suggest you work the exercise first and then look at the solution. All right, so let's get started. If there are any other concerns or questions or points to discuss about the mechanism, we will do that later on. The format of this material is a bit awkward, I should admit. I didn't want to rewrite all my notes and equations and figures and so on, which were all prepared in LaTeX for the book. So this is a PDF file where I have reduced the text from the book into just point form. All the equations are exactly the same as in the book. The numbers of the equations, the section numbers, figure numbers are all the same. I've added some material. I'll let you know when we get to those additional items, which are not in the book, but could be in the updates document that I asked you to download from here. Okay, I'll let you know of that. Because this is a PDF file from prepared using LaTeX, there is a bit of a formatting problem. So you'll have to bear with me as I cut in and out and zoom in and zoom out to show you the details. Let's see how it works. In Calgary, I don't do this. I write everything on the board. But that is an undergraduate course, and I need to go slower. Here, this is a graduate course, so I would expect you to keep going with me at a slightly faster pace. If I go too fast, please stop and ask questions. So this is the book that you already have, so we'll skip that. This is what I meant. I'll have to sometimes switch back and forth. The general idea of the course and the general aim of the subjects we study in this course is illustrated in this set of plots, which is also on the cover of the book. At the top, we have the heart sound signal, the phonocardiogram, or PCG as it is abbreviated. You have cycles of the heart here, from there to there, first heart sound, second heart sound, murmur, and so on. And then you have the ECG, the electrocardiogram here, which illustrates every heartbeat with this peak known as the QRS complex. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 heartbeats in that channel. The ECG is the most commonly used biomedical signal in clinical practice. There are several other signals of electrical nature, such as the electromyogram, the electroencephalogram, and several other some part of the body gram, indicating the electrical signal generated by that part of the body during its normal course of activity. The ECG is the most commonly used signal, and it's very popular. Almost any person on the street will recognize that from the variety of TV shows that deal with hospital situations. The heart sound, of course, we are all familiar. If you just put your ear on the chest of another person or just pay attention a bit, you can listen to the heart sounds and appreciate the heart sounds fairly easily. It's a rudimentary signal in that, as far as that kind of familiarity is concerned, but it's a bit more difficult to record. You need good transducers and recording environment to get a good heart sound signal. In the presence of abnormalities of the cardiovascular system, the heart sound signal could become very complicated, having a continuous series of activities, and one may not be able to recognize the various events within the cardiac cycle using the heart sound signal. So it is common to record the ECG along with the heart sound signal. So it helps you identify where is the beginning of systole, the contraction of the ventricles, where is diastole, when do the ventricles relax, and so on. Along with that, it is also common in pediatric studies and in studies related to cardiovascular diseases to record a pulse signal, and here we have the carotid pulse signal, which is recorded at the neck here, either the jugular pulse, which is further up, or the carotid somewhere here. So in this region on the neck, you can record the carotid and jugular pulses, which indicate the pulsatile movement of blood being circulated through the body. You could also feel your pulse on your wrist, and there are also transducers that you can put at your fingertip and record a basic pulse signal, but at the extremities, the details of the pulse may be lost, whereas the carotid and jugular pulses will show you this notch, this discontinuity, which is known as the dicrotic notch, which relates to the closing of the aortic valve, which indicates the end of systole or contraction of the ventricles. So this is a very important indicator. The reason I show these three channels is that quite often we will not be dealing with one single channel of a biomedical signal. Instead, you may have 3, 4, 5 several signals from several parts of the body that are somehow related. In this case, all three signals relate to the cardiovascular system. One is electrical, the other is a sound or acoustic signal. It's also a pressure signal, the derivative of a pressure, but it's an acoustic signal that you can listen to. And the third is a pressure signal or a pulse signal. You cannot listen to the pulse, but you could feel it. Now, these three signals give very important information about the cardiovascular system, and they carry complementary information. There is some information that is seen on all of them, but there are some items that are available only in some of them, in one of them and not the others. To extract information from such a collection of signals, you need to process and identify events. There could be noise. This ECG is fairly clean, but there could be some noise, and then the first thing you will have to do is to remove the noise. In the first chapter and the second chapter in this book, and perhaps today and maybe a little bit of tomorrow morning, we will study several biomedical signals in terms of how they are generated, what are their characteristics, why should we study them, how are they affected by different types of pathology or diseases, and what is the information contained in them. In chapter 3, we will study how to remove artifacts, noise, and things that we don't want that come with the signal in a practical data acquisition situation. And then in chapter 4, we will study detection of events. How do you say that this is where the ventricles contract? And that is an important signal processing aspect. Now, going back to chapter 3, I mentioned removal of artifacts is a major problem. But once you have overcome that problem, you can address the next issue, which is more important. That is, how do you break a given signal into parts and say, this is one event, this is another, this is another? And we will look into signal processing techniques for the detection of events, such as a heartbeat known as the QRS complex, which I have marked here with this triangle marker. You'll be writing MATLAB programs to do this. There is also this dichrotic notch point that I mentioned is important. And there is a technique that we will study later on to detect this little kink. It looks very small and feeble, but it is possible to detect it. And my MATLAB program, I put these marks, these little diamond marks, indicating where the dichrotic notch was detected. I mentioned earlier that the heart sound signal could be very complex in the sense there could be continuous vibrations, and you may not be able to say where the first sound is and where the second sound is. Where does the cardiac cycle start? It may not be obvious from the heart sound. But by using the ECG signal as a trigger, you can say this is where the cardiac cycle begins. So we use the ECG as a trigger or a marker to analyze a different signal from the same system, the same cardiovascular system. Here, using the dichrotic notch in the carotid pulse, we can go from here and subtract a delay, which is the time taken for the change in the pulse from the aorta to, the carotid pulse is recorded on the opposite side. I said here, it's here, on the right side. So from here, from the aorta to come here, there is a small delay of a few milliseconds. You need to subtract that. And you take this point and go there and subtract the delay, and you get this marker, which indicates the beginning of the second heart sound. So by using three channels of different signals from the same system, you're able to analyze this signal, which is the heart sound signal, in a better manner than by using only that signal. It doesn't mean the ECG signal has only that purpose. It can serve many other purposes, but in this example, we are using the ECG only as a marker because the interest is in the heart sound signal. Of course, you may not be interested in the heart sound signal or the pulse. You may be interested only in the ECG for some other applications, which is fine. So to do this, we will study signal processing techniques that will convert the ECG signal to just a pulse train. It's not a square or rectangular pulse train, but is approximately one pulse per heartbeat. So we will study techniques to do this and how a simple peak detection algorithm can give you a reference to identify the QRS complex. Then we will study how some other techniques based on the second derivative and so on can be used to convert the carotid pulse into a sequence of two pulses for every beat. And then detecting the second pulse in every beat, you can get the dichrotic notch, and from there you can go to the second heart sound. So this illustrates the sequence of events in a signal processing example. This is just one exercise or one example. And having found these two points, we can cut the heart sound signal. We can segment the heart sound signal into the systolic part and the diastolic part. We can also do later on separation of the systolic part into the first heart sound and systolic murmur, if it exists, and then the diastolic part into the second heart sound and diastolic murmur, if there is a murmur. Then you have broken the heart sound into four parts. This way you can pay attention to individual components in a signal and analyze them with more attention to detail. So that is our aim in general. Having cut these parts, we can extract features. And in chapter 5, we will look at a few examples as to what are the typical features we could extract to characterize some biomedical signals in the time domain. In chapter 6, we will look at some frequency domain techniques based upon the Fourier transform to compute some features that will again help us in identifying characteristics of a biomedical signal which might have already been segmented using some pre-processing steps. If we can get that far in this course, I think we will achieve something by the end of the course. Okay? So that's the plan. And that's a general illustration of one example or one exercise in biomedical signal analysis. We will be using specific techniques for each task to detect the QRS complex, to detect the dichrotic notch. But I would not want you to consider these specific techniques to be techniques only for that purpose. Rather, we are learning techniques to address a problem, and an example is provided. You could perhaps imagine other situations where similar techniques would be useful, or similar techniques with some modifications may be appropriate. The experience in solving these problems and appreciating and designing specific techniques for these specific problems will help you gain experience and knowledge and develop the skills to develop other techniques for other problems. Not necessarily in the biomedical area, could be in seismic signal processing, could be in speech processing, could be in some other completely different application of signal processing. Within biomedical engineering, we will look at a few other examples of the EEG, the electroencephalogram, the electromyogram, and a few other signals that are less common. Okay? Now, some of you have said that you already have experience in signal processing, so you may find some introductory parts a repetition of what you have already gained in your previous courses. I hope you have known what the course content is from what was proposed. And if you already have experience in signal processing, this will give you an overview. Some of you said you would like to see an overview. And if you haven't had any experience in signal processing, then this will be new experience. And if you have had experience in some signals and not the others, then you will gain something else. Hopefully, overall, by the end of this course, you will gain something new. But this is an introductory course on biomedical signal analysis. All right. So, starting with the basics of biomedical signals, let's look at the nature of biomedical signals in general. Now, we are looking at biomedical signals that may be from human beings, but also could be from other living creatures. Some of you may do experiments with dogs or mice or cats that are commonly used in specific experiments for specific purposes. What you have to recognize is that living organisms are made up of many component systems. And each system performs a specific task to carry out the various activities of that particular creature or organism. We have, for example, the nervous system that controls several activities of the various parts of the body, the cardiovascular system, which is studied very often in detail using several types of recording systems and signals, because that forms a very basic component upon which the rest of the systems depend for nourishment. The cardiovascular system, the heart, and the arteries associated with the heart pump blood and circulate blood around the body, giving nutrients to the other systems and keeping them alive and functioning. Then we have the musculoskeletal systems, the limbs, which facilitate locomotion and activities such as grasping this thing and moving around. And then we have the speech system and so on. These are just three examples. So you could consider the living organism to be a collection of various systems, and then you could apply certain engineering techniques of systems analysis to each of these systems. Quite often we make the assumption that it's a linear system because we know linear systems very well. We also make the assumption of shift invariance or time invariance. We also make the assumption of stationarity. But there are several examples where these assumptions are not valid. And to be general, you will have to consider a nonlinear dynamic system. But under certain conditions, the assumptions may be valid and appropriate. Each system is made up of several subsystems. So if you want, you can break down the heart into the atria, the two atrial upper chambers, the ventricles, and the circulatory system within the heart, and concentrate on a sub component if you wish. And each one of them will carry on a certain physiological process. I'm trying to move towards how we look at systems and signals in engineering and tie all of those ideas to biomedical signals. So the cardiac system carries on the rhythmic activity of pumping blood throughout the body to deliver nutrients, and also pumping blood through the circulatory system within the heart to keep the heart itself alive and well. So that's important. And this is well known. If there is any impairment of the arterial system within the heart, such as deposition of fat, then that could be disastrous because that part of the heart's musculature could die and lead to cardiac failure. So that is an illustration or a situation where you can consider a system as something that carries on a certain process. A process is an activity that involves a few things. Physiological processes are complex phenomena. They're not like linear shift invariant systems like the amplifiers and other systems we study. They involve nervous or hormonal stimulation and control. So there is a certain external control. There are inputs and outputs that could be in the form of physical material, blood being pumped, neurotransmitters that carry information and control signals from one system to another, or information in some sense. The light image that is captured and focused onto the retina is converted and encoded in some sort of a frequency modulation signal that is transmitted to the brain via the optic nerve. So what is transmitted from the retina is a signal, purely electronic signal. We would like to say electronic, but a biochemist would say it is just some ions flowing there. But it's an electrical signal, let's say. But the input is light. So light is converted into an electrical signal. So the input is light, the output is an electrical signal if you were to consider the retina. There could be action. That could be mechanical, electrical, or biochemical. The heart pumps. There is contraction. And when I'm doing this, I'm contracting muscles in my fingers, and that is mechanical output. So the input-output system, input-output of the system, need not be just electrical signals as we consider in electronics labs. However, it's interesting that from our perspective, and hence the whole course on biomedical signal analysis, that most physiological processes are accompanied by signals. There is some information that comes in and goes out, and that is modified somehow. And in doing this action, the system generates a signal. Could be electrical, could be mechanical, could be something else. And that signal is what we are interested in this course. The signal could be biochemical in the form of hormones and neurotransmitters. could be electrical, such as the ECG that we generate and we're all familiar with. Could be physical in the form of pressure or temperature. And we'll see some examples of these. So we have a system that carries on a process, and there are some associated signals. Now there is a normal situation, which is the day-to-day activity that the system does, and everything goes well and everybody is happy. But unfortunately, there could be some diseases or defects that affect the system. There could be a person born with a certain cardiovascular defect. Then the heart does not function in a normal manner. There could be a disease that affects a child or an adult, and then that affects a system in a particular way, and it misbehaves. It does something that it is not supposed to do, and then we have pathological processes. Pathology meaning disease of some kind that affect the performance of the system. The heart may not pump blood efficiently, or the health and well-being of the system or the organism or the individual, the person. So a pathological process is typically associated with signals that are somehow different from the corresponding normal. So we need to study not only the normal situation but also the abnormal situation. We need to understand that this is the normal state. The ECG I showed is a normal signal. And then how is the ECG affected by different diseases? What are the features that are modified by the disease process? And we will look at examples. So we need a good understanding of a system, of a biological system such as the cardiovascular system, to observe the corresponding signals and assess the state of the system. Is it normal? Is it good? Is it functioning properly? And if you do something, if you treat it for a problem, has it recovered? How do you assess the function of the system? We need to understand these concepts. So this is a diagrammatic representation of what I said just now. It's not in the book. I just prepared this recently. So a physiological system, if you want to look at this as an engineering block diagram, we tend to put things in block diagrams. So that's a system. The input could be biological material, neurotransmitters, hormones, signals. This is what I said just now. The system does something. There is a transformation through there is a physiological process that converts the input to output. The output could be the same or could be different. The input could be neurotransmitter, the output could be a signal. So these need not go one-to-one. And then there could be a pathological process that affects the system. And the system does not perform the normal task in the usual way, and the output is somehow affected. So we're not considering changes to the input, but to the system reflected in the output. A very simple example of temperature, body temperature. Most infections will cause an increase in the body temperature. We get a fever. And typically we just go like this and feel our temperature, or maybe here. Some people have the habit of putting the palm like this. Some are more sensitive to measuring temperature this way. And by measuring the temperature just at the forehead or the neck, you can say if the person has a fever or not. But that is qualitative. I would like to draw the distinction between qualitative or subjective analysis and quantitative or objective analysis. What a physician does in many senses is qualitative, and the opinion given is subjective. What engineers do typically is to measure something, and then we have quantitative assessment. So we would like to typically get a quantitative measure in terms of numbers. And that you can do using a simple device such as a thermometer. If you don't like mercury, then you can use some other electronic sensor, and it's easy to measure the temperature. Now, this is very basic material for you, but still I would like to go through a sequence of notions that will lead from a single measurement to something that could be more complicated, function of time and space. So a single measurement is a scalar. If you just measure the temperature using a thermometer or some sensor, you get one measurement, 39.5 degrees Celsius. That's a scalar. So it's a measurement at a particular or single instant of time and at a particular position, wherever you put your thermometer. If you want temperature recorded continuously, which is not typical with a patient, with a human being, but in intensive care units, there could be continuous monitoring of temperature, but you don't sample it 100 times a second. You may sample it a few times per hour. Then we obtain the signal as a function of time, temperature as a function of time. And it could be a continuous time signal if you're recording it continuously using an electronic sensor. And then you can write this as a function of time, x of t, and you would call that a continuous function, continuous time function or analog. Both the time and the measurement could be defined for all values and all time. But that doesn't facilitate application of computers. So typically, you would discretize the signal, not only to facilitate the application of computational techniques, but also for efficient representation. As I said, if you are measuring temperature, you don't expect my temperature to change within a second. It'll take several minutes to change in response to something. So you need to know the rate of change, the maximal rate of change of that thing that you are measuring, and then you can sample it appropriately using the Nyquist criterion, and you discretize the signal, so you get a discrete time, a function of discrete time that you could write as xnt, where capital T is the sampling interval, which we assume is uniform between the instance of measurement. Or you may drop the t and say it is just xn, n being the sample number. So n is the index of measurement of sample in an array of measurement, which you can call a signal, and capital T is the sampling interval, which we will assume is uniform. Typically, you will also quantize the value of the output from your transducer. So rather than giving it to infinite precision, you may reduce it to one of a certain number of levels. If you use a 10-bit A to D converter, analog to digital converter, you have 1024, 2 to the power of 10 possible levels. Then the signal is quantized, and it can only take one of these 1024 values. Then you call it a digital signal. So that's about distinction between analog discrete time and digital signals as functions of time, starting from a scalar or single measurement. So here is an illustration. One of the advantages of the way I have prepared these notes or lecture material is that these numbers are the same as in the book. The equation numbers, the chapter number, the section number, not the page number, are the same as in the book. So this is the first figure where I have one temperature, 33.5 degrees Celsius, which is a scalar. If you make several measurements, you get an array of the values. These are actual measurements from a patient. All the signals that you see in the book are real signals from real people, patients, subjects, volunteers. So 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and so on, the temperature changes between 33.3 and 38. Now, if you are just given these numbers, it's hard to see a trend or hard to analyze what is the pattern. Whereas if you plot, it becomes easy to see the trend. And here the temperature is increasing, has increased from 33 to 38 over the course of time from 8 o'clock in the morning to midnight. And if you were to plot this for a long time, then you see how the temperature of the patient fluctuates in response to sleep, medication, whatever. What you infer from this is a different question. Right now, I would like you to observe the point that from a scalar, you have an array, and you have a signal as a function of time. Yeah?
What has happened there?
This is from the patient, yes. What has happened, I don't know. So we're not analyzing this, but this is from a real patient at the hospital, yes, from the Foothills Hospital. So this is 8 o'clock in the morning. Maybe when the person got up, he or she was cold due to some reason, could be the effect of medication. I simply don't know that. Okay? But that illustrates the trend. And if you plot it for longer durations, then you will see more fluctuation.